Today's daf in Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Hei, and we're holding on the last line of Samach Dalet Amud Beit, and we've been talking about this crazy sugya that doesn't seem to have anything at all to do with Erevin, which is about getting drunk, or getting high, or having wine, and giving a psak halacha. Okay, giving a psak halacha. Already, I understand what it's doing over here. Not really, but at least we've seen a very strong pattern in which all of the inyanim of Teresh Shebaal Peh and the inyanim of Gezeras and so on, they all appear here in Erevin in the way we interrelate with the various Piskei Halachas and so on and so forth. So for some reason, there's a profound connection, even in terms of the history of the development of Teresh Shebaal Peh. There's just a very profound connection between the concept of Bichlal of Erevin and the fundamental nature of Teresh Shebaal Peh. And because of that, it becomes one of the, it becomes the first, actually, issue about, yes, absolutely, we're getting there, Ira, darling. Then it becomes one of the first things that we're interested in terms of Erevin. And as we pointed out yesterday, we have this strange relationship between Yayin and the idea of Tefillah, which is Aveda, of course, with Not of Aviyu, and then Knisa outside of your Mechitza, as Ira just pointed out. Now, that is definitely very strange, because that relates also to Horah, because they were Nichnas without Rishus, and they didn't follow the Horah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and they were Meira Halacha, as the Gemara itself said over here, they were Meira Halacha Bifnei Rabbah. Now it's beginning to get interesting, you must admit, right? So we've got here this incredible parallel of the beginning of Horah. It's like the first Horah that we have, which is at the moment of the Asiyas HaMishkan. It has to do with the nature of Teresh Shebaal Peh. It has to do with the nature of Hayrah. It has to do with the nature of drinking wine. And it has to do with the nature of Mechitzes. And ultimately has to do with the concept of Erevin from the very beginning, because that's how we define our original idea of a Mavui. And in a sense, that was our introduction to Erevin and Sukkot together, obviously concepts of Mechitza and space and so on, right? So, okay. And one of the fascinating things is that yesterday we also got into the problem of Rav Nachman's relationship to Torah. This was a question of whether he's going to treat Torah like a pimp. And it was a fascinating interrelationship between the din of Mechitza as seen by the Akum that is living in the area, which of course brings us right back to the closing days of Sukkot. It's the perfect sugya for Shmini Atzeres, which is where we began it. And that's the relationship of Goyim to the aspect of Chag HaSukkah, is the aspect of Mechitzas and so on. And there were two Piskei Halachas of Shmuel, one of which he liked was the thing about being a picker for an Akum. And the other, he says, I don't like. Why don't I like? I don't like it because I need a little bit of talisker in the morning in order just to get moving. So how can you tell me that you're not allowed to be mispah, not allowed to give a psak halacha? I can't even think straight without wine. And it turns out that throughout all of these sugyas, we're going to be seeing, and especially today, we're going to be seeing the idea of how the concept of the development of your psyche in the presence of wine and the gradual change in psychotropia is very fundamental to the idea of wine. So that wine serves sometimes purpose of Rav Nachman, and sometimes it serves the antithetical purpose. And the type of person that you are is measured by the way in which you deal with that wine, which you understand. I know it's going to sound very far-fetched, but please take it into consideration that the Gemara really understands from the beginning the interrelationship of your spatial perceptions. When I say, I don't mean your simple, the way we normally define spatial perception in the brain, but the idea of the concept of space and most extended sense of how you understand space and experience space as fundamental to Mais Bereishis, and therefore to Shabbos, and therefore to the essence of your mentality and the human condition. So the question is, that relationship, how deeply does it connect to your state of mind. It cannot be a coincidence that we view the differences of deos, and particularly the differences of deos in terms of their response to wine, and today we're going to see even the relationship of wine in its etzim to Sanhedrin, because of the Shivim, Nichnas Yayin, Yatzasod, and the concept of somebody who knows how to handle wine is the equivalent of Shivim Sel Sanhedrin. And then finally, we're going to get to the most astounding thing, that if wine affects you in the correct way, then you are similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who also is affected by wine in a particular way. The way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is affected by wine, so to speak, is the Vayorach Hashem Esriach HaNichoach, which we view as an extended concept of psychotropia. And because of it, at the moment of the Yetzia of Noach from the Teva, which of course relates exactly to this idea, new concept, new worlds, new mechitzas, transitional states. There's a transitional state of mind, well known in terms of psychology and in terms of neurobiology, in terms of the transition between a sleeping state and a waking state. But there is also a transitional state in the difference between a shasui and a shikor, which is so fundamental and so experiential that it defines the halacha, as we're about to see right now. Because of that, I believe that there is a profound connection between the concept of your das, and therefore piske halachas, and conceptualization, and heira'ah, and the way in which you are capable of experiencing transitional states, which is what Reb Nachman is saying. I am stuck in the way that I perceive things unless I drink wine, because I need to be able to see things freshly in order to be able to give a psak halacha. And if I'm just coming from the way that I am, so then I can't really give a psak halacha. And that's why I don't like what Shmuel said. This opens up the sugya today to these transitional states, to understanding what getting out of your space means. And this, incredibly, is deeply nogea, the idea of tefillah. And I just want to point out why that's true. It's not just because of the Aveda and of Aviyu and so on and so forth, but as we spoke about on Sukkot, the whole meaning of Sukkot is tefillah. The word selusa, which is tzel, also means tefillah, and we're going to see the use of that word in terms of wine today. Tzilusa means clarity, a clear brain. So tzilusa in terms of tefillah, tzilusa in terms of mechitza, and a semi-mechitza state, which we call tzel, in which something is not completely open but not completely closed. That relationship b'chalal to the mechitzas of Erevin and Sukkah is clearly a hidden level that's been with us throughout. It's a between the lines subtextual assumption that goes through the entire Masechet. And because of that, you must understand that these are not just side issues. They are really profound questions of the way in which you perceive the world, which ultimately is a perception, a spatial perception of your own existence, which is given to you, as we see in Ma'aseh Bereishis, through the assigning you dimensionality. And so because of that, these, even though they appear to be very, very unrelated and tangential issues that we just happen to manage to get into because of a stray reference to a psak of Shmuel that came together at the same time with another psak of Shmuel, one which related to Erevin and one which related to wine, one which Reb Nachman did like and one which Reb Nachman didn't like. And for some reason, the Gemara is so stupid that it just goes off at a total tangent to talk about the relationship of wine, tzilusa, and psak halacha, and tefillah, and so on. Come on, guys. So if we understand that the Gemara is really meant to be taken seriously, so then we'll take this very seriously. And therefore, when we get up to the days at the beginning, right at the bottom line of Samach Dalet Amud Beis, we're talking about also the actual impact on the concept of din, which is obviously related to the Iker idea of Psak Halacha and the Reach HaNichayach and all of the original Chiyuvim of wine, din in Gan Eden, din of Nodav Aviyu, din of Noach, all of whom were dealing with exactly the same issue, which had to do with wine and the way that they handled wine. So we could open up today's sugya with exactly that. So Om Reb Sheshesh Bishum Reb Elazar Ben Azariah. Look, if I take seriously this idea of wine, Yocholani Liftorat Kol Olam Kulo Min Adin, Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash V'ad Achshav. From the time the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, the Posek considers Klal Yisrael to be drunk. And if Klal Yisrael is drunk, then they cannot be held responsible for what they do. Because it says in the Posek, Lachin Shim'ina Zot Aniya U'Shechurat V'lo Miyayin. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling us those who are intoxicated from all of the pain and from all of the changes that we've seen and can no longer properly resolve in our mind the experiences that we're going through, and therefore we're not responsible. Says the Gemara, what do you mean you're not responsible? What is this, one of these libertarian courts over here? You're not responsible because your mother beat you up when you were a kid. What kind of nonsense is that? So you're intoxicated, so it's not the end of the world. Take responsibility. Meisve, shikor, mikro mekach, a guy is drunk, so he wants to come back later after the Japanese guys got him totally drunk when he signed the contract, which is what they do, you know. And he wants to say, well, I'm not responsible for signing this contract. These guys plied me with sake until I didn't know what I was signing, you know. So forget about the contract. Doesn't work. So the idea over there is that if you sign something, it is signed. Mikro mekach, you sold something, you sold it. You did an avera that you're chayav misa on. You can't say to the court, well, it was intoxicated, you know, and therefore I'm not responsible. There's no such thing. Memitinoto, vis chayav malkas, malkinoto, kololoshodavar. The general rule is, just because you're drunk doesn't mean you're not responsible. And in fact, areo kipikeach l'chol dvarav, you have a din of any other individual, except for one thing, that you're poter min atfilah. But the reason that you're poter min tefillah is because of the unique requirements in tefillah for an interrelationship that requires a full openness and lucidity and clarity of mind. So that's that. I understand that's because you can't be mitpalel. But anything else, you're a normal person. So that means, by the way, ipso facto, that tefillah is talking about a completely different level of mind and perception. Let's get that clear right now, because that's what the halacha is saying. You don't like the terminology because it sounds too sophisticated. That is exactly what the halacha is saying. And because of that, this interrelationship that I'm claiming over here is reflected in the actual halacha of the difference between tefillah and anything else. So what did he mean when he said, I can potter everybody from the din because they're not responsible just because they're drunk? No, I meant, he meant to say, I can potter everyone from all of the lousy tefillahs that they've been davening for the past thousands of years, and they never concentrate on their tefillah. So I'll tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course they can't concentrate on their tefillah. How are they supposed to concentrate on their tefillah with the crummy lives that they lead, in which they're basically drunk? So that ain't a chinami. That I can potter, because that's the din l'gabei tefillah. Omer Rav Chanina. Listen, this business about being drunk, not having any legal implications, is not really true. It depends how drunk, obviously. So, lo shana lo shalo yigia lo shichruto shalot. I mean, once you get as drunk as Lot got, so then yigia lo shichruto shalot, then you're potter indeed from all of these other things, because then you consider it to be a shote at that point. Omer Rabbi Chanina, very strange lashon over here. Kol ha-mefik magen b'sha'at ga'ava, sogrim v'chotmim tzarot ba'ado. Now, this is a very, very poetic way of saying somebody who passes on davening when he's in a state of being a little too high is actually keeping out of trouble. The reason that he uses this strange lashon is because he's basing it on a pasuk in Iyov. So the Pasuk says, again, in classic Iyov fashion, which is like, what? Ga'ava afike maginim sagur chotam tsar. Now, that is a very ungrammatical and completely weird kind of statement for prose. So let's take a look at each one of those words. So ga'ava means the guy who's up there, right? He's totally aloof in the world. So we're taking that as meaning he's in a state of intoxication. Afike. Now, Afike is exactly what it means. Our first pshat is going to take Afike as meaning passing on something, passing by something. So if somebody is Afike Maginim, Maginim, that means like shields. Somebody passes on shields. Sagur closed Chotam, the seal, tsar of thin or trouble. So what does that mean? So basically what Rabbi Chanina is saying, anybody who passes on the bracha of Magen Avraham, meaning he doesn't start davening, when he's in a state of Ga'ava, has then sealed off a lot of trouble for himself because it would not have been a good idea for him to open his fat mouth when he doesn't know what he's talking about. Okay, so the other way of, so my, that would mean that the word afik means I'm passing on that, like we would say in English. So where do you see that afik means abure, to pass on something? Dichtiv achai bagdu kamo nochal. Kafik nichalim ya'avoru. So they betray me like a stream of water, and like they pass me by like an afik nechalim. So you see that afik can be used in the sense of passing on something. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, 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 you got the pasuk wrong. You're right about what it means, but you're wrong about how it means it. So actually the word sagur should be added to the first part of the pasuk. And the thing to say is, gava afike meganim sagur, in a state of intoxication, expressing, lafik means a production. That's what we use it in modern Hebrew. We want to talk about a producer of films, right? So he's mefik. So in a state of intoxication, to produce a prayer of Magen Avraham, he shuts down, sagur, then chotam tsar. Then he's sealed all of these tsars from coming up, and he's protected himself. Which means the same thing, but according to this, the meaning of afik would mean a production. So my mashma dahai mefik lishna de giluyehu. So where do we see that the modern Hebrew mefik is that it means to produce something, to express it externally? Dichti vayera'u afike mayim vayigalu mostot tevel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is referring to the Ten Commandments movie, you know, where you've got the Kriyas Yamsuf, right? So it says in the Pasuk, yeah. So over there, the channels that were hidden before became expressed, they became open in the Kriyas Yamsuf, and the foundations of the earth were niglas. It's an idea of putting it out. That's why it was such a big movie, right? Because it's the ultimate hafaka. Anyway, listen, who cares, really? I mean, the Pasuk means the same thing, right? So, Michta, it doesn't matter whether you follow Reb Chanina's approach or Reb Yochanan's approach. I mean, conceptually, the Pasuk is saying the same thing. If you forego saying Magen Avraham, meaning you don't daven when you're drunk, so then you're in much better shape, right? What's the difference? Ah, the difference is Reb Sheshes' behavior. I'll tell you what Reb Sheshes is. Reb Sheshes, if he got intoxicated, so then he would go to sleep in order to be able to get rid of his wine, because we said that Shena, if it's just a revius, that Shena takes care of the wine. So what he did was he told the Mishamish that he had, he said, okay, wake me up in 20 minutes, and I'll just have a power nap, and then I'll be able to daven mincha, right? So this is what he told the guy. So the question is that true or not? So Rabbi Yochanan, he is okay with that, because afike just means to actually express the Magini. But Rabbi Chanina, who learns that afike means you got to pass on it, he obviously holds you have to be ready to miss davening if necessary. And you cannot be semich on the fact that somebody's going to wake you up, because if you're woken up, that does not mean that your wine has passed. If you wake up on your own, then your mind is clear, and that means you were able to define your internal clock to wake up. If you need an alarm clock, then you are definitely still drunk. So that would be the nafkamina. Oh, this is true in general, by the way, even if you haven't had what to drink. If you need an alarm clock to wake up, you're drunk. Amar b'chia bar ashi, amar rav. Kosh in da'atom yushevet alav ayit palel. In general, if you don't have a clear mind and you just feel that you're not settled, do not daven. Because it says, batsar al yoreh. Actually, as Rashi points out, There ain't no such pasuk. Don't give me this dichti, but I love the way you guys make up psukim now. When you, so he says, well, maybe it's in Ben Sira somewhere. I don't know. I don't have that edition. But Tosfos like links it to like interrelated psukim that use the lashon of Batsar. But over there, it's in terms of tefillah, as Tosfos points out. But we've already shown it's the same thing. Tefillah is, as the Zohar points out, kriya. And kriya is always definition. And therefore, it has to do with psaka. It's exactly the same thing. You're always actually being posek halacha when you're davening because you're defining what are the things that are necessary in the world that you'll be able to give the keach of brocha to and so on. So in reality, it's not much of a kash of tesis. Because, and that the Gemara has been assuming this all along. Rabbi Chanina, if he got angry on that day because of something, let's say he tried to call up customer support. So he wouldn't daven on that entire day because, I mean, basically you just can't get your head back on after spending 2 hours with customer support anywhere, right? So then on that day, he didn't daven. So, b'yuma d'ratach lo matzli. He says, look, it says, batzar al yored. Mar ukva, when there was a day where there was a yuma d'shuta, so it was like a chamsin day. It was like just unpleasant weather and all those ions. Lo avinafik levedina, he would not even go out to the bezdin. Omer of Nachum bar Yitzchak, in order to paskin a halacha, hilchata, boy tziluta, you see, tziluta, clarity, tziluta, shade, tziluta, tefila. Fascinating. So in order to paskin a halacha, you need tziluta, like one of these beautiful days, you know, when the north wind is softly blowing and you feel like it's a beautiful world and everything is clear, then you can say a psak halacha. Said Abaya, look, I can tell you that if my mommy would say, could you pass me the kutach? That was it for the day. I couldn't concentrate. You got to concentrate. You got some woman telling you to pass her the milk or give her a cup of coffee. That's the end of my learning today. Rava said, if I got bitten by a louse, I couldn't learn. That was it. Marbare de Ravina, his mother made him actually completely separate for every day of the week, separate clothing, so that that way he wouldn't get lice because the eggs would die by the time he put it on again, and he would be free of all of this disturbances. Now the question is, what do we do with the nights? So Omer of Yehuda, look, man, you know what the night is for? It's for doing what Moshe is doing right now, sleeping. Huh, there we go. So the night was made to sleep in. As we know in all those TED Talks, you're going to waste the nights. You're going to kill yourself. Says Rish Lakish, yeah, so what do you think the moon is doing there? That moon is there so you can be able to learn. So it's supposed to keep you going with the light and with the excitement, and that way you can rely on it to study. So they tell people would tell Rabbi Zera, you know, it's amazing. Like, learning with you, everything is so clear. So Rabbi Zera says, that's correct. That's because I learn when I got my brain functioning in the daytime and not when I'm half asleep. And it's all the yamamim, you know, it's all the things that I learn in the daytime. That's what makes it clear. Rav Chisda's daughter was very upset that Rav Chisda, her father, was not getting enough sleep, and she had just watched one of those TED Talks. She was, like, really nervous. So she says to her father, Abba, yeah, and my boy, Mar, main import, I mean, don't you think you need like a little bit of sleep? Omar Allah, so he said to her, listen, very soon there's going to be days that are all go on forever for sleeping, and they're way too short for learning in. So in the grave, there'll be plenty of time to sleep. Right now, I got to use my time. Omar of Nachum Bar Yitzchak, you should know that Anan Pale Diyamame, Anan, we are hired by the day. So when we're learning Torah, We have to do what we do like you're working by the day. You can't just say, well, you know, right now I'm going to take off to watch a movie. Maybe I'll make up for it, you know, tonight or something. Whereas Rav Acha bar Yaakov, he would borrow time and would pay it back in the nighttime. So if he needed to do something and take off from his learning, so he would just pay back the learning that he was going to do, he would pay it back at night. I think that's the pshat. Okay, others learn Parle Diyamama is that he's agreeing over here with Rabbi Zera and that the limud specifically should be done in the daytime. Others learn Anan Parle Diyamama means you know, you think your life is in your own hands. Basically, you have a job, and the same way if you'd be working for somebody, you weren't allowed to waste a minute of that time, like the whole story of Reb Chanina ben Dos and so on and so forth. And it's just coming to say that you are mechuyev to use your time. But obviously, in the context of the discussion of whether Yom V'Laila is better to learn in and so on, it's a little bit difficult to believe that it doesn't relate to that sugya. Omar Rabbi Elazar, Kabba min haderech al yitpaler shlosha yamim. If you've been traveling, don't daven for 3 days, because again, your mind is simply not at ease until you actually reconnect to your surroundings and you feel now that you can concentrate. I think everybody found after getting out of Yontif and this entire period, you need a 3-day vacation just to figure out where you are in the world. It's amazing how many people. I'm so confused. And it's almost the given that when you have those types of changes, you need new perspective. That new perspective takes time. And the people who don't give themselves time basically make the kind of decisions that are like davening from a head that isn't straight. Omar Rabbi Elazar, so Abba min haderech. How do we see this? Because Ezra, for heaven's sake, Ezra talks about how he got everybody that was making aliyah, they all got together at Kaptzimel and Ahar HaBalava, V'nachnesham Yamim Shlosha. First, we waited there for 3 days and we camped out there. And then Avina Ba'am, and then I went there to decide what it is that we should do and how it is that we should deal with all of the things that we need to deal with, and I needed to explain things to them and talk to them. But you see that he wouldn't do that for 3 days until he had a clear mind that he was able to decide what to do with the Kayanim, the Levim, the Am, and so on. So kosher came for us. So the tefillah requires the same type. Now that, of course, wasn't tefillah, but we're taking for granted that Avina Ba'am is the equivalent of tefillah. Avua de Shmuel, Shmuel's father, when he came from a trip, he would not daven for 3 days. Shmuel would not daven in a house where there was beer. The smell drove him wild. He was already half drunk from the smell of the beer, so he refused to daven. Rav Papa wouldn't daven in a house where they had harsana, where they had the fish, or whether it's fried fish or whatever, but how am I supposed to daven with that smell? Anyway, all of these in Yonim, unfortunately, because of our situation of being permanently drunk, do not apply to us because of the fact that the Shulchan Aruch says nowadays we don't have any kavana anyway, because so what are we supposed to do? Just because we're permanently drunk, we should permanently cancel tefillah? Because, I mean, we'll never be able to concentrate. So you might as well just go ahead and pretend that you're davening, which has led to a lot of disastrous kind of relationships to davening, because that's what most people do. They don't even make an attempt to daven, and they just figure, okay, I'll go through the motions and so on, which is horrifying. So I don't know. I think you have to use your brain a little bit on this and see the difference in, according to your own matzav of when there's whatever shaykhs you're to constantly be trying to really daven, and therefore you can't just make up your mind. I mean, this is my own personal opinion. I mean, Chas V'Shalom, I shouldn't disagree with the people who are so convinced that this is what you're supposed to do. But I think that every individual's got to make a call on this, at which point it destroys his concept of tefillah b'chlo. Om Rebbe Chanina, if you can be mitpate b'yeno, so let's say you're really upset at something, right? And somebody gives you a little bit of wine, or Richie comes along with a little talisker, you know? And you feel better, and you say, yeah, okay, fine, forget it, it's okay. Then you are someone who is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you have midat kono, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the same thing. It said, Vayorech Hashem et Reach HaNichoch. Here he is, all angry, there's a mabul, destroyed the whole world. I mean, it's pretty serious stuff. That's major anger, you know? And then get this nice smell, which is connected to Shmuel's smell of the beer, says Rashi. You see that the smell itself is the Reach HaNichoch. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just gets a little of the smell. Yeah, it's not so bad. We can manage to live with it. I'm not going to destroy the world anymore. Goes out and makes a whole bris on it just because of a little bit of schnapps. I mean, okay. So then apparently, if you enjoy your talisker, so then Yishpo Midas Kono. That's why they call him the Rebbe. Omer Rebbe Chia, Kol HaMityashev B'yeino. If after you drink, your mind is more clear. So then yesh bo midah shivim zekenim. So then you're like the whole Sanhedrin, because you see that the yayin is nitan b'shivim otiyot. The gematria of yayin is shivim. And the word sod, which is the deepest level of Kabbalah and secret and so on, is also nitan b'shivim otiyot, where the gematria is the same. Which is why people say, nichnas yayin yotze sod. Wine goes in and out pour all of the secrets. But if you're not that kind of guy, and the wine pours in, but on the contrary, you become more clear as to what is suitable to keep in and what is not. So then you must have the das of that sod, which is the shivim, and shivim, of course, is keneged, all of the members of Sanhedrin. And by the way, please, again, this is not just a loose connection, because the idea of shivim in Sanhedrin, and the idea of shivim umais, and the idea of the shivim that were yardu mitzrayim, is, remember, and yardu mitzrayim is liminal. That was the whole point. That was at the moment of the actual crossing through the gates that they became shivim. With the last leda. So this is not just a loose connection. Shivim always means the full spectrum of possible perspectives. That's why we need a 70 in order to be able to have a full psak halacha in a Sanhedrin. That's why we have shivim ponim l'teira. That's why we need the 70 primary languages, because each one of them is the interrelationship in a particular way to the issues of perspective on earth. And so on. So therefore, we're talking about over here wine being liminal and the interrelationship of the way in which my mind sees the different aspects of things. Those are, again, the most profound way, those are spatial perceptions, obviously, in terms of your perceptual space. And because of this Omer of Chanin, you have to understand that wine also serves emotionally. In different ways. On the one hand, if people are miserable having just lost a loved one, then wine serves to comfort them. And for Rishoyim, the only thing that they have in life, it's this fascinating thing, because of the fact that the Rasha feels lost, and he feels like he's always just stuck and never is able to experience anything outside of the horrible life that he's leading. Because there's so little awareness that's given him. So the thing that makes him happy is sitting in a pub and drinking and connecting to on some level to something outside of himself. And therefore, it serves as Tnu Shechar La'oved, someone who is lost. That means that he's a Rasha, doesn't have where to be in the world. Give him a good bar, or give him a good pub. And that's why people use those places to speak out their hearts. You know, you speak to the bartender, you talk out your tzoras and so on. Where are you going to go? So there's no Torah, there's no outside reality to speak to. The Gemara is giving a profound insight that the getter of yayin that allows you to paskin or to be midaita shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what allows the Rosha to survive, because at least I can connect to something, and it's like the only satisfaction that I have. Otherwise, I feel hopeless. So Tnu Shechar La'oved, but it's also good for Morei Nefesh, who just feel lost for another reason, because they just lost something that they can't comprehend how they can get along without. So there too, for the Avelim, it's also the Morei Nefesh. Omer of Chonim Bar Papa, Kol She'in Yayin Nishpach B'toch B'toch K'mayim Inu B'chlal Bracha. If you don't have wine pouring in your home like water, so the question what that means in terms of amounts or in terms of recognizing that, you know, I'm not going to take into consideration how expensive it is. If we need wine, we use it. The same way if we need water, we use it. Different approaches. But in any event, you are not included in the overall bracha that says, Uveirachet lach mechavet meimecha. Now, putting lechem and mayim into the same pasuk like that is a hekesh, which must mean that just like the lechem referred to in the pasuk can be purchased with kesef maaser, so then the water is a liquid that's being referred to that can be purchased with kesef maaser. What kind of liquid can be purchased with kesef maaser? Ah, mayim yayin. And why is the Torah calling it mayim? Ah, to tell me that you've got to have yinishpach bebeit hakamayim, then you have a bracha. But if you can't relate to your wine properly, that's not a bracha. Milolo. Omer Abiloi, you should know that there are three things that your person his insides are expressed, that you could see what kind of person he is. One is bekoso. How does he drink? And Rashi says this means how is his mind affected by psychotropic substance? So does he hold on to his das and he allows his mind to expand, or does he become cuckoo? The other one is bekiso. So the way that he uses his money is a profound insight into many things. First of all, is he honest in business? That's the most fundamental thing. Is he selfish? Does he give tzedakah? Is he a person who's like very makbid on every penny? And as we all know, people in how they deal with money is such a profound insight. Like, they'll shock you. You think suddenly you're dealing with someone, you know, you thought you knew and is like this great guy and he's really so easy to get along with. And the moment it comes to a $5 issue of like something he's supposed to pay for the shutafut in the house or whatever, I mean, people become completely undealable with, to the point you would not believe it's the same individual. Make promises, never fulfill the promises, claim they're giving tzedakah, forgot to mail the check's in the mail, whatever. It's beyond belief. So that bekiso is also profound insight into the internal. And remember, the Rambam says that idea is the sof yitzro shel adam, is his desire to control his money, and that he therefore has this insane, you're meeting something very, very profound. Ubekaso, and how is he when he gets angry? And what does he get angry about? And how rapidly does he cool down? So therefore, it's a cute rhyme, right? Bishloshat avarim adam nikar, bekoso, bekiso, ubekaso, which led to this wonderful advertisement about 50 years ago, for Tissot watches, which was Bishlosha Dvarim Adam Nikar, Bekoso, Uvkiso, Ubishoon Tissot. And so therefore, if you've got this kind of watch, you can tell what kind of guy it is, right? It's the level of awareness of Chazal that was in Israeli society that you could literally, you know, use it as an ad. There was a recent ad that was even more amazing than that in terms of awareness of Chazal. There's this big billboard for Tadiran air conditioners, right? So the billboard says, Tadiran, ve'eino Tadiran, Tadiran kodem. I was like, wow. I mean, you have to be learning Kutchim in order to know that one, right? Brilliant. Okay. Anyway, that's the kind of thing that really sticks with you in terms of advertisements. Okay, now some say it's also a way to know somebody is how he laughs. So there's a sense of humor. Does he laugh stupidly? Does he lose himself in laughter? Or does he use laughter in the same way as a relationship to the world and so on? Anyway, believe it or not, we're back to the Masechet, Erevin. Oh, yes, indeed. Omer Avyuna Merav. So now what would be? So we just finished discussing what turns out not to be so tangential and which has very much to do with the depths of Das and recognition of the difference between Yisrael and Nochri. So Omer Avyuna Merav, Yisrael and Nochri bipnimit. So remember, we just had a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and we said that the difference is that according to Rabbi Meir, even being in a chotzer with one nochri, we give that nochri a din of a dayar, and he needs to either, you're going to buy his rishos from him for Shabbos, rent it, or he asers you. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, a minimum of two Jews need to be there, because the whole point has nothing really to do with Erevin, and it's just that we're using Erevin. So if it's something that is normally done, that a Jew would live in that kind of situation, so then we make the gezerah, because it's the rabbanim make gezerahs on normal situations. But if it wouldn't be done, it becomes a milsa dolo shchiach. So since one Jew won't normally live alone, so because of that, it's not nogea. Now, what I want to know, says Rabbi Yonah Merab, not actually doesn't say what I want to know. What I want to tell you is that a Yisrael and a Nochri live in the inside Chotzer, which does not have its own exit to the Rosh Hashanah, and they have to walk through the outside Chotzer in order to get out through the door of the outside Chotzer. Now, technically speaking, please add this to your list of Munachim. Technically speaking, this is called drisat haregel. You have rights, you have an easement, you have a right for your feet to be trampling over the other guy's rishus. So now, the question of drisat haregel, just in order for us to understand the sugya rapidly, is actually a machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachomim. Remember Rabbi Akiva's famous drasha that dictum that we've had before, which is regel hamuteret bimekomo is oseret shelo bimekomo. What that means is that according to Rabbi Akiva, even though I am able to carry in my own inner chatzer, let's say I made a eruv, if I walk through your area, even though I'm only walking through, not carrying, not using, my rights of walking through make me an actual dayar in your area. And unless you make a eruv with me too, then you're not going to be able to carry. So that's oser. The Rabbanan hold, drisat haregel does not aser. Only rights of usage in the chutz aser. Fine. Okay, so if that's the case, let us begin in understanding what's happening. So Rav says, look, the question was, there is a one Jew and one Nochri in an inner chatzer, and there's another Jew that lives alone in the outside chatzer, and they have to walk through the outside chatzer. What's the din? So the Maisa, I'm telling you what happened, was Rebbe had to paskin this, and Rebbe said, that guy cannot carry into his chatzer unless he took a lien from the Akum. So even though he's living in the outside chatzer, it's us. The same story was presented to Rabbi Chia. And also he said, no, it's us. So now after the shir that Rabbi Sheshes gave on Shabbos, so Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef are sitting there right after the shir, Bashilei Pirkei the Rabbi Sheshes, and Rabbi Sheshes was sitting with them, and they were just having a discussion afterwards. And Rabbi Sheshes said, and they were discussing this sugya that Rav mentioned, that the psak is that it would be usher. And Rabbi Sheshes says, look, you know, I mean, it only makes sense like Rabbi Meir, because, I mean, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, there's nobody that's doing something normal over here, because you're living, one guy is living with the guy, so then that doesn't count. So it's only going according to Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi is sitting there, and Rabbi is sagaciously nodding his head. Karkesh Rabbah, Reisha, yeah, makes sense. Rabbi Yosef is shocked. And Rabbi Yosef says, I cannot believe that two intelligent people like you, Rabbi Sheshes and Rabbah, should make such a crazy mistake. Litu b'hai milta? It's exactly the opposite. What the heck is wrong with you guys? If it's going according to Rabbi Meir, can you explain to me why the case that's presented was the problem of a Jew who's living outside together with the Jew inside? Obviously, we're trying to figure out whether those two Jews make it already usher because Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says you need two. But the guy who's living alone with the goy is clearly not usher. And by the way, if you want to tell me, nah, it just happened to be that was the case, I'll show you that you're wrong. V'chitem, you'll try to tell me, that was just the Meiser Shahaya, but it had nothing to do with the Psak. No, because then they asked Rav, okay, you told us what the din was of the guy living outside. What's the halach of the guy living inside, right? Pnimi, b'mekomo, can the guy in the inside chutz, does he have a problem because he can't make an Erev with the goy? Or since he's living alone, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and he doesn't have a problem. And guess what Rav said? Ha, 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 mutter. So how can you tell me that Rav was going like Rabbi Meir? It's exactly the opposite. He was going only like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Yeah, but says, wait a minute. It doesn't make sense even according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Say, Elamike, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. I mean, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that the only time that the goy makes it usher on the Jew is where there are two Jews. Not that they're just two Jews, but two Jews who usher on one another. But over here, the two Jews don't usher on one another because one of the Jews lives in the inside chatzar and the other Jew lives in the outside chatzar, right? I hate that word Jew. I can't stand Jew. Anyway, one Yisrael lives inside and one Yisrael lives outside, right? So now they will not usher on each other because the inside guy only has drisas haregel. And drisas haregel, according to the Chachomim, doesn't aser. So it doesn't work out according to Rabbi Eliezer either, because it doesn't fit his definition. There's one fundamental criterion according to him, which is Ad Shnei Yisraelim Osrim Ze Al Ze. And I know what you're going to say. Yeah, okay, so who said he holds like the Chachomi? Maybe he holds like Rabbi Akiva, right? So you're going to say to me, no, but according to Rabbi Akiva, Drisus HaRegel does Aser, because Regel HaMuteret Bimakoma is still Oseret Shalom Bimakoma. So then if that's the case, what do I care about the Goy? So then even if there was no Goy there, there would still be a problem, because you can't make an Erev over here anyway. He's not allowed to carry because the Jew who lives inside is carrying through the outside thing. So what are you confusing the case with the Goy? So I don't understand. Nope shot makes sense. Not that it's going like Rabbi Meir, not that it's going like Rabbi Yisrael. I'm going to make sense here. Even if you're going like Rabbi Akiva, nothing makes sense. Olam Ali Nokri, Afil Yisrael Nami. Omer Avuna Berei the Rav Yeshua. No, no. That I can explain, because, look, it could be going like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, as long as, like you said, it's also going like Rabbi Akiva, the Drisus HaRegel Oser, and it's talking about that the two Jews made an Erev. So now the question that they asked Rabbi was, but what about the Goy? Will the Goy Oser, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, in this case, despite the fact that they're not living really in the same Chatzar? So, and therefore, the only reason that we paskin that it's osir is because there's a nochri. So, time at the ikka nochri. But if it wouldn't be for that nochri, it would not have been osir. So then they asked this interesting, it should say Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar mirab, what would be in the opposite case, where the Yisroel was living in the goy with the goy in the outside chatzar, and the Yisroel was living alone in the inside chatzar? I'll tell you why I think it might be different. I think it might be different because it could be that the reason that Rav says it's usher in the case that came up over there, that's because, remember, the entire issue about the goy is based on how normative living that way for a Jew is. So it is pretty normal to live in an inside chatzar with a goy alone if there's a Jew in the outside chatzar. Why? Because then if the goy wants to murder the Jew, he's nervous that the guy in the outside chatzar is going to say, hey, where's my friend Yossi? I haven't seen him in a while. And then the goy will not be able to say, oh, I don't know, he went out to the store and never came back. Because then the guy on the outside say, like hell, he went to the store. I live on the outside. He has not been through my chutzner in days. What did you do with the body, you bum? I'm calling the cops. So he's worried. So that's why he won't kill the Jew. So the Jew is feeling comfortable living with the guy. But if it's the other way around, if the guy lives in the outside chutzner, and he says, okay, so if this fellow comes from the inside and says, where my friend Yossi? Oh, I don't know. I've really been very worried about Yossi. He went out to buy some bread and butter the other day and never came back. What are you going to do? I mean, you don't know whether he went out or not. Or do we say, oh, Dilma, maybe even in this case, the guy is afraid because he's worried that while he's in the middle of murdering Yossi, this guy may come in from the inside and catch him in the act. So maybe that itself makes it normal to live in the chutzner with the guy. Omar Leh, so Rav tells Rabbi Elazar, look, you know, Shlomo HaMelech says, Tein lechacham v'yechkam od. Stop getting so pedantic. Stop getting involved in this particular psychology, that particular psychology. Take the case and take it as a norm. And it's the same way that the Oved Avodah Zarah is considered to be normative. In that case, it's also the same if he's in the outside. Now, once happened that Reish Lakish and the Talmidim of Rabbi Hanina came to a particular motel for Shabbos. And the idea over here is, this is what Rashi seems to say is that it's a motel. And as a motel, what it means is that each room in this motel had its own exit to the parking lot directly. So you didn't have to go through the main thing. And the motel was owned by a goy who had one of the units and had his own exit into the parking lot. And so in order to be matir, they wanted to carry together into the parking lot. So they made an Erev, the Jews that were in hotel, the Talmidim of Rabbi Chanina and Reish Lakish, and they wanted to rent the rishus of the parking lot from the owner who was running the motel. But it turned out that the owner who was running the motel was not the owner. He was a renter. So the question was, can they actually, and the renter wasn't there. That was the problem. So the guy who was there for that week when the renter left was the guy who owned the whole property, and he came and he was there looking over things and so on. So the socher wasn't there, but the maskir, who was the original landlord of the whole thing, he was there, and they wanted to know, can they rent it from him, even though he's not currently the guy that's actually living there, he just happens to be there. So Amru Ma'olam Egar Mine. I mean, obviously, if the relationship is such that the landlord cannot throw out the tenant who's now renting from him and he's running the hotel, so if he couldn't get rid of him before the contract runs out, so then of course I can't rent it from him. It's not his. I mean, what good is it for me to rent it from him? So lo tiboyelar de lo agirina, of course we can't rent it. But the question is that over here, the deal was he can throw him out, and there was no particular time for the contract to end. So what's the din in that case? Do we say that since theoretically he could have thrown out the renter and he could have run the place on his own, so we have a right to rent the rishus for the parking lot from him? Or do we say, but he didn't, I mean, he didn't throw him out. Currently, he is not the owner. Currently, the guy who's living there is the owner. Said Reish Lakish, look, I don't know what the halacha is, but I tell you, let's rent, let's carry, and then when we get to the Zikne Adorim, we'll ask them if we did the right thing. But the reason for that is that since we have a das over here, lekula and lechumra, so okay, it's basically a suffix of the halacha and erevin, where we go lekula and it's drabanan, so we'll rely on it, and then exactly, always shoot first, ask questions later. That's exactly the point. All right, so we'll go and we'll find out later, okay? So they did. We'll ask them if we did the right thing. Anyway, they get there finally, and Reb Afis is there. Did we do the right thing? Absolutely, you did the right thing. Yofa sitem, it's a good thing that you rented. Now, there was another maisev, Rabbi Chanina bar Yosef, Rabbi Chia bar Ava, and Rabbi Asi. They came to another motel, and over there, there were only Jews that were staying in the hotel. And actually, it doesn't seem to matter. It's confused in Rashi. The Gerus is confused whether they made an error. If they didn't make an error, we'll see that the same thing would apply anyway. And what happened is that over there, they were very happy at being able to carry. And all of a sudden, the owner, who's a guy, shows up. He drives up in the middle of Shabbos. So now they got a problem because they've got the guy there that they didn't rent from. So the Nochri, who was the owner of the Pundak, he came down Shabbat. So then they asked each other, well, do you think we're allowed to rent it from him on Shabbat or not? And what are the tzaddim over here? The tzaddim are like that. We could say, look, rental from a goy is essentially the equivalent of joining in an Erev, right? Now, obviously, you can't join an Erev after Shabbos. The whole point of the Erev is that at the moment that Shabbos is chal, you're considered to be one rishus. Okay, so then this should be the same thing over here. If a ma'ariv is only the day, then the socher is only the day. Or maybe, no. Actually, the socher is not similar to making an Erev. The socher is similar to getting a guy to be mevatel rishus. There's two things that we can't do with the guy. We can't have him be mevatel rishus. We can't have him join the Erev. Which one is this taking the place of when we rent from him? Bitul rishus, which can be done in the middle of the day? Or is it the equivalent of making the Erev, which cannot be done in the middle of the day? That's what I want to know. So do we say ma mevatel rishus can be done afilu b'Shabbat? The socher can also be done afilu b'Shabbat. So Rabbi Chanina bar Yosef said, I say, let's rent and have fun. Rabbi Asi says, no, you can't rent in the middle of Shabbos. So Rabbi Chia bar Abba says, okay, look, you know, Rabbi Chanina, he's a good guy. He's a big Talmud Chacham. Let's rely on him and rent. And then we'll find out if we did the right thing. So sure enough, after Shabbos, they go and they call up Rabbi Yochanan. Were we allowed to do what we do? And he said to them, brilliant. Yafasitam shesachartam. You did absolutely the right thing. Okay, Rabosai, so we've gotten some of our conceptual ideas, right? Unfortunately, I stole your olos from you to get some of these ideas straight, but I think it was fun. And it's still sort of Isruchag if you're Chutz Laretz, and you know, it's like Isruchag of Isruchag here, whatever. So we took it a little easy. And after all, it was a Talisker day, and the Talisker Rebbe is with us, and he's smiling, and he's Misyashev Bedaite. What's that?
I'll drink to that.
Mitchie smiles every day.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem.
Nice stuff. I must say that was a very, very nice stuff.
Oh, great. Okay. Be careful, though, because there's some who say that even just saying it was a nice stuff is also pimping. But I don't think that's true. I think you have to compare the two in order to be considered a pimp. This one is nice. This one is not nice. Just to say it's nice, we find in a lot of places. People say, oh, kamamale anishwait. So we don't find any tightness on that. It seems to be because of the fact that Reb Nachman contrasted the two. That isn't proper. Okay, so great. I'm very happy that you enjoyed, and we'll try to bring you some more pretty dafim as we go.
Man, Rebbe, it relates,
they're all pretty.
It relates to Rebbe Shir. The Rebbe said in Tarmas Sar elsewhere, when is Miras Hayuluch Kecha good, and when is it bad? That balance, it might have the same interrelationship.
Perhaps.
Yes. And Tosfos and Samach Dal Amud Aleph says there's a mistake in the Girsa. Those Sfarim who say it can't mean don't pray, what does Siglus and Dadas have to do with Tefillah? Right? Rebbe Zenderich over here would say, Tosfos, what are you talking about? It's Nagia, this issue, though.
Absolutely. Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.